Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off this week by digging through all the rubble left by the New York Jets. Then Jenny and Connor come in to break down all the news of the week. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome back into the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We're going to kick things off with a big story over the last week. We hadn't had a chance to address it yet because I believe it went down on Thursday and we record on Tuesday. So I did want to address what happened in New York. And I really think after digging through this for the last 5 days, it's actually pretty simple. Okay. And the easiest way to break this down, I think you had a passive aggressive head coach who plays both sides of decisions. You had a general manager who is not a strong decision maker. So while you had the coach kind of playing both sides of things, not wanting to take the blame for this, but lining himself for credit for that, you had a guy who had the power to make decisions, struggling with that end of it. And with all of that going on, there wasn't somebody over the top that was monitoring this very much. And so you didn't have the strong owner who was basically telling people to get their crap together as they were preparing for free agency or the draft. I was told that Christopher Johnson was in the building for maybe 10 days the entire offseason. And so who else is running the show there? Is it the team president? I don't think Neil Glatt's very involved in the football side. Is it the general counsel, Jaime? It's just, if you look at what was going on inside the Jets organization and you look at the personalities of the two guys who were very involved here in Adam Gase and Mike Maccagnan, it's pretty easy to see how this blew up. And I'm going to bring in a couple former, I don't even want to call you a former Jets beat writers. I would say like veterans, veterans of the wars of the Jets beat, right?
That's good. Yeah.
Veterans of the wars of the Jets beat. I mean, this is like par for the course, right? Like, this is a new story, but it's not really a new story, right?
Yeah. The organization just has really lacked a direction. You know, it's always sort of things are coaches, general managers are not aligned. I mean, the last time they were probably aligned was Rex and Mike Tannenbaum.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say what you want about that regime. Obviously, it didn't end well, but they did have a period
of two
AFC championship games. But think about just sort of they've really struggled to find their footing. And I think you have to look back to ownership. And perhaps the only surprising thing was, you know, I thought Christopher has earned some respect in league circles ahead until this point. And so now I think it was sort of, a confusing that they're continuing, right? I mean, I think a lot of people were like, hey, you know, Christopher's got a good handle on this. But if you think back to it, he probably, you know, maybe it's not unexpected, doesn't have a lot of experience as sort of watching over things while Woody is his appointment in the Trump administration. So, you know, it just there's when you say that they're not, he's only in the building 10 days, then of course things that have been.
And that's not
problems.
That's not to say that like there are places like where the owner's not around where it works. Seattle, like Paul Allen, while he was still alive, was never around. But at least there was an organization. There was like an order to things. You know, like you have to have someone in the building who is making like. There's got to be some sort of quality control, right? Like it just doesn't feel like that was. It was just sort of every man for himself.
We talked about this, you know, during free agency. You know, if you have a general manager perpetually on the hot seat, who's making sure that he's just not spending irresponsibly to save his job? And that's kind of what Mike Maccagnan is doing. And I think that would have been obvious to anyone who, you know, was in the building. And maybe Adam Gase felt that he needed to get him out because that was part of the problem. He didn't want to continue that.
Or the GM's just spending to appease the owner and doing what he thinks the owner wants.
And that's also true, too. But again, it's who is managing general managers, right? Who is managing all this stuff? And it's crazy to me that, you know, owners and other people who kind of extol those football virtues of, like, you know, you sleep at your office and you work hard every day, miss some of the things that are going on, like, right under their nose. I mean, I think even if you were in the building for 10 days, you probably could have noticed that you picked up on the fact that this wasn't going to be going very well.
I think there are a lot of people that when Gase was hired thought that he and McCagnan were a bad pairing. And right. So obviously it took the ownership a while to see that. The other issue you have now is with player relationships, right?
Yep.
So, you know, you have in your column, you report that the coaches were raving about Ed Oliver, and then they take Quinnen Williams, and it's like, how does Quinnen Williams feel about that? And obviously the Bell situation, you know, all of these things are getting out there about...
I mean, I think Quinnen's okay, because he's a rookie. Bell's different.
Bell's different. But still, even if you're Quinnen Williams and you hear the coaches were raving about Ed Oliver, like, I wouldn't feel great about that. I mean, I'm a sensitive person, so maybe that's not a good benchmark. But and then the Bell situation is really tough because, you know, I think Adam Gase really likes the player a lot. But, you know, maybe the questions were over the price tag. Those are two different things. But as a player, it's sort of hard to separate that. And then you're... you know,
like, how does that
just a few months into your tenure as a Jet, you're already dealing with this speculation.
And here's where I think that can hang over a relationship. If, like, I don't think it'll affect them now. Like, Adam can go in and have that conversation, like, hey, look, business is business. I do like you as a player. I want you here. Like, he can have that conversation now, right? And I think as long as things are positive, and generally during training camp and it's easy to generate good feelings, right?
Right.
What happens when they hit a bump in the road? And that's where I think that these things can kind of fester, right? Like, where it's like, you like that's where, like, a player can point back and say, like, this dude didn't want me here anyway. Like, right? Like if Adam's got to sit Bell down for some reason in September, right? Whatever it is. Like, what does that immediately go back to in Bell's head? Right? Like, human nature, it would go right back to, oh, this dude didn't want me in the first place.
I think Bell has handled it well. I thought it was good that he posted a statement on Twitter. I mean, that's what social media, you have the opportunity to say something right away in whatever words you want to say it. And, you know, that was a good, I thought, measure by him to just say, hey, I'm moving forward, I'm training, everything's fine. But it is still a tough situation.
It's incredible how many, you know, powder kegs were kind of charged as soon as Adam Gase took over, right? I mean, there was the perceived notion that him and McCagnan weren't going to get along. There was the coaching staff that he's putting together full of big personalities with bad pasts. There's the free agency element of it now. There's the second-year quarterback, and it's like, wow, I mean, this could all go spectacularly, like, franchise-altering wrong if we're continuing down this path of dominoes. It's not just, oh, you know, Le'Veon Bell's going to get mad, and then, you know, we're going to miss out on the end of the prime of his career. It's like we could be ruining another franchise quarterback's life cycle.
Well, and think about this too. What happens when Woody gets back? Like, what happened? Like, Woody, who, like, this is his franchise, right? Like, so let's say in a year he's back, right? Like, let's say Trump gets elected out of, like voted out of office, and now all of a sudden Woody Johnson is on a plane back to the United States. What happens?
Do you think Chris consulted Woody about this decision?
That's a good question. That's a really, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the
he
answer.
He said,
to that. Did he say anything? Did he address that?
Well, I was at an upfront that he did with reporters a couple months ago, at the end of the season. And he had said that he did not consult with Woody for any of the major decisions that they had made to that point, like, including, I think, you know what it was? It was right before the start of last season. So it was drafting Sam Darnold, you know, doing a lot of stuff like that. He said he did not consult at all with his brother.
I mean,
this is a step above that, certainly, you know, and someone that Woody hired. But theoretically, if you could say, I'm going to trade up to draft a franchise quarterback.
There are some weird rules about that too, right? Like, I don't know if Woody is actually, I mean, maybe Chris might have to say that because there might be rules about Woody being involved when he's gone.
That's a good point.
President doesn't have to adhere to that. I don't know how many of his cabinet members have to.
Yeah,
but.
I think there's something there. Like, I maybe an NFL rule. I can't remember. There was something there where, like, maybe Woody couldn't technically be or isn't supposed to be technically involved. Okay. I the other thing is, so, like, look at what they've done since. So McCagnan's one big first round bust gets traded out of town, like literally what, like 5 hours,
later?
Right? Like, and my understanding of that whole situation was that they had, McKagan had held firm, I want a five for him, right? And Kansas City takes advantage of the situation, makes a phone call, offers a six, and he's out of town like 10 minutes later, right? So he's gone. They've fired other scouts now, right? Like the Jets have fired scouts that were connected to McKagan. And all you're hearing is, I just want to coach the football team. But now he's making these roster decisions. So what is it? Right? Like, so now you've got Gase acting this way. And if you're a GM, Ken, if you're Joe Douglas or you're George Payton or you're one of these guys who, like at least on paper, would have options and maybe have the ability to wait, why would you go? Why would you come here?
It's absolutely. Have we seen a situation where a coach is an interim GM? That to me is
not
an unusual. Usually it's, you know, someone else on the personnel side, like a scouting director or something like that.
Well, and empowered to make decisions on not just
trade
roster,
compensation.
Well, trade and then like staffing, like
right.
scouting staffing. Like he's right. making those decisions now.
I mean, I guess if you have rationalized everything to this point, now firing the scouts just makes sense if you're Adam Gase, right? I mean, if you have the power, now you're getting rid of anybody else with ties to the person that you just kind of, you know, stabbed in the back, right? So you don't want any negativity. Right. And so you're just eliminating anything else while you have the power. But it's just strange to me that, you know, I mean, what was it? 3 days before McKagan was fired, he went out and chastised reporters for even, you know, bringing up a situation like
right.
this. How ridiculous. And now he's coming out and, you know, I think the value of his truth is probably not exactly what he'd like it to be. Right
and
now.
I don't like, so, okay, let's get back to the Woody thing though. Like, right. So like, let's say, and on paper, they shouldn't, on paper, like it doesn't look like they'd be an attractive job for a strong GM candidate, right? Let's say that they've got to take a little less with that hire because of the situation they put themselves in here, right? Like now Woody comes back in, say, a year and a half. Like let's say late 2020 he comes back. What's stopping him from firing everybody? Like, so that's got to be another factor for your GM candidate, doesn't it? Because like on the scouting side, a lot of times those guys don't get second chances, right? Like it's pretty rare. And we have some examples, Gettleman, Dorsey, but like it's pretty rare that guys get second chances. And I mean, like if you're a GM candidate, you got to look at that and say, like, well, what happens in late 2020? Am I going to get fired?
Right. Yeah. This is a seems like a very difficult situation to sell to people who would be interested and qualified for the job.
Yeah.
Emphasis on the second part as well.
So
qualified.
Yeah.
All right. So I got two questions. I got one question for Connor and then one question for both of you. First of all, is Gase already moving down your survival kit? Like, is he already in the timeline?
He has blown up the lift. Like,
he's just really,
you know, this is like
gone
6 months onto the job. Fired the general manager. You skipped.
I know
you skipped right to step five. That
I know
was
you haven't dusted off
not
the list in a while.
6 months. We're like 4 months.
That's true.
Like 4 months.
I know you haven't dusted
job.
Off the list in a while, but like, I mean, if like is he already?
This what he did was essentially when I did my coaching survival guide was the nuclear option. It was button five. It was the red button, and he did it 4 months into the tenure, which is amazing. It is amazing. You know what though? That is what happens to great minds in the world, right? Analytical thinkers. You have to go big or go home. So I guess good for him.
Okay. The question for both of you guys, being again veterans of the wars of the Jets beat, where does this rank? Where does this last week rank versus
that's a good question.
Versus Tebow, versus the Idzik mess, versus Rex's firing? Like where does this, like what beats this out?
It ranks very high. Yes, very high. I would
number
say
one?
Maybe two behind Tebow.
Okay. Connor?
I would say for me, it struggles to crack the top five. I don't know.
Really?
I mean, this is I don't know. I still have post-traumatic stress from the Tebow, Greg McElroy. Who's the other court?
Well,
Mark Sanchez.
I put Tebow first.
Tebow is definitely first.
I put Tebow first. However, I will say that this is crazier than all of the Idzik drama because it happened fast.
Yeah,
like
right.
Rex
right.
and Idzik at least made it through a year together.
That's very,
I mean, they
had
an anniversary.
Yeah.
You know, they you know met some relationship milestones. Then things went off the rails, but they made it through a year.
Marone was an interesting one too.
Marone was interesting.
Marone, if you want to go way back, we could go to some of the Favre situations.
Well, now if we want to go way back,
but that
I mean,
predates
I resigned
you guys.
As HC of the NYJ is probably one. But
that's
I think
right.
are we talking like you
that's
know
true.
Recent history or overall?
I mean, like
history?
You think about that. Like, so you think about that, right? So 97, they get the first pick, and Peyton Manning decides to stay at Tennessee.
I mean, that's also right, and that's a franchise-changing moment.
If Peyton Manning goes pro, maybe Belichick doesn't leave in 2000. Maybe this is a completely different franchise.
But see, now this is a different list, Albert.
Instead,
that is a franchise-changing yep. moment. I don't know that this is franchise-changing.
This
I
is
thought
a circus
we were ranking
this
just
is a circus,
this is a circus
circus,
moment.
So we were ranking circus moments.
Circus
so
moments.
The Favre does fit into circus moments.
Favre fits into the circus moments.
Yeah, Favre with his, because I think that was a kind of groundbreaking too. The first time we've seen those sorts of pictures surface. I mean, it's happened since, but. I think that was sort of a first at the time.
I mean, the Jets are super sensitive to the circus references.
Right.
But you really can't escape it when the situation.
Yeah. And maybe like the Giants stepping.
They bailed them out. I mean, oh my yeah. God. I mean, they were still reeling from that draft at least. And I mean, I'm not saying reeling. I'm just saying in the court of public opinion here,
Daniel
which is
Jones,
not take Daniel
big
Jones.
Winner.
Yeah.
Big winner.
Daniel
big
Jones winner. Would be the number one winner. Dave Gettleman probably number two.
Yes, but Daniel Jones top.
Yeah, Dave,
top
Daniel Jones can now go
good
about.
For him.
Good for Daniel.
Good for him.
He didn't do anything
week.
Wrong.
Like, that's
Daniel
right. Jones, I've been on this train for a while that I felt bad for the yeah. reaction that
Daniel
he was
Jones
experiencing.
Could just go about his business now. Like no problem anymore for him, right? All right, we'll jump into the news. News topic number one for the week. This is the spicy wording from Connor Orr. He did write these this week, and I haven't read them yet. So, and Jenny, I'm not sure if you've read them yet, but this is going to be my first look at them too. The NFL and NFLPA issued a joint ha statement yesterday.
LOL.
LOL. ROFL announcing the inclusion of both a quote, pain management specialist and, quote, behavioral health team clinician. This seems to have softened their stance on marijuana as a pain-relieving agent or at least served as an opening of their minds as troubles with opioid painkillers mount. What's next for weed in the NFL?
Interesting that weed's in all capital letters here.
You're very enthusiastic about the weed, huh?
What's just next for weed in the NFL? Or like yeah, maybe just, are you yeah. texting a lot of people that it autocorrects to weed?
That
there's
might
a
have
lot
something
of questions
to do with it.
Here, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been on. I felt this way for a long time. I think the NFL should have quietly stopped testing for marijuana a while ago. To me, it's. I don't think there's any winner when you bust guys, right? Like no one. I don't think the public really cares if these guys are smoking. Obviously, you're hurting the player. You're hurting their teams. I mean, I don't think anybody wins. And so I think the only question left is the NFL going to ask? Is the NFL going to actively ask for something back? Are they going to try to turn this into a chip and say, oh, well, if you give us X, then we'll give you legalized marijuana in the NFL?
I think that, you know, I read up a little bit on the NHL's policy recently because a lot of people are saying maybe they'll just do what the NHL does. And it kind of hits on both of your points, right, which is it gives them an ability to quietly at least – if you don't want to stop testing for it, like the NHL keeps that information. And if a guy keeps coming up on these tests, they say, hey, we got people here if you need people. And if not, just, you know, don't let it affect your work. Don't let it affect your life, you know. And I think that that's probably the way to do it. I mean, obviously more harmful drugs need to be addressed by teams, especially if they're in that opioid family and there's a health risk there. But
that to me is like the big thing here, right? Is like if this is preventing players from using dangerous painkillers, why wouldn't everybody want that? Even if we can't prove that marijuana is effective in that way, right? Like, even if that's not proven, and I'm not sure it has been proven that it's actually an effective painkiller, but even if that's not actually proven, if this is preventing a player from using the painkillers, then that's a win, right? Like, I would think that would be a win.
It's a guaranteed win. I mean, and, you know, and the only detractors that I've seen from any policy like this, are, well, all the players are going to claim that they're in pain, or all the players are just going to do it now. I mean, what some recently retired NFL players have estimated that up to 80% of the league uses now. Yeah. So what's the issue?
Yeah, it's the next step toward essentially a rule change. I guess the question is how long that will take.
So right now, by the way, this is, I think, important to note here, too. I'm going to count the teams. The Seahawks, Raiders, Niners, Chargers, Rams, Lions, and Patriots, and Broncos. That's eight teams are playing in states where it is fully legal. Okay, so that's eight of the 32 teams, 25% of the
teams. It's one quarter of the league.
That's
yeah,
a quarter of the league.
Difficult math.
Yeah, there you go. That's good fast math, Jenny. Better than me. I think that's a factor, too, is like, so many of these teams are now playing in places where it's fully legal.
Yeah. I mean, my only thing, and Jenny and I were talking about this before the show, is, you know, it's great to make this announcement, you know, especially ahead of CBA negotiations, and it kind of shows good faith, especially with the inclusion of a behavioral health person and a pain management person. However, their inclusion into the organization is another matter, right? Will their opinions be taken seriously? You know, will they blend into the,
that's
the
always
role
a
of things?
Question,
and that's always a difficult thing, right? Because it's nice to say that we have all this stuff. And this goes back to anything that the NFL's kind of implemented in an emergency situation since Goodell's taken over. But how much of it has actually taken part of the normal routine, part of the cycle?
Right. And it's like, is it an active effort to fix the problem, or is it a way of washing your hands of it? You know, oh, we took care of that. Like, so that's taken care of. Or are they actively making sure that these people are empowered within the organizations? Similar to concussions, right? Like you had like the concussion spotter and everything else. Like, and are the teams really working with these people, or are they seeing them as a necessary evil and working around them?
Yeah, I think it's a good step. I mean, I have to see how the implementation works and track that, but it's something that makes a lot of sense. And as you said, Connor, it shows a willingness for the league and the union to be working together towards goals that make sense for both sides.
Yep. All right. Jenny, news item number two.
All right. Caught me with my phone on the lock screen. All right. Searching for legitimacy as an organization, the Jets turned to the only universally accepted human football brand, the Manning family. While it seems unlikely, could Peyton's lack of experience in any front office role hoist him to the top of the pile? Pile, Connor, indicates that there are like many candidates.
That's true.
There's like a heap of people that are desperate to rush to Florham Park, which we have already sort of...
The traffic jam in front of...
So maybe not pile, but...
traffic jam at One Jets Drive. I don't think Peyton Manning is going to do this. I know the rumors out there. I'd heard like that Peyton had one of the side benefit of signing in Denver was getting to observe John Elway in that job, because he had some interest in being in that job eventually. He took notes on the way Elway did the job, kind of has like an idea of how he would do it. I think part of why he hasn't jumped back in yet, and he hasn't taken one of these opportunities yet, and God knows in Indianapolis they talked about it, in Cleveland they talked about it, because he's got the relationship with the Haslams. I think he's enjoying retirement more than he thought he would. He likes living in Denver. I think eventually he will do it. But if you're him and you've waited now 3 years, is this the one that you would like go for?
3 years and three admittedly kind of bad jobs at the outset, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, the three jobs that have, you know, I guess purported to be open, the Colts, the Jets, and the Browns, are all kind of have relatively terrifying ownership situations, I think, for people that are looking to make their stamp.
See, I would argue the other way with the Colts. The Colts, like, I think ownership, as strange as Jim Irsay is, I think he's actually been a pretty strong football owner. You know what I mean? Like, he lets people do their job. That organization, for the most part, has been, outside of the Pagano-Grigson rift, which, you know, they tried to fix and it didn't work, like, they've been a fairly well-run organization under Polian and Dungy and now Ballard and Reich. And so I don't think that that's, like, a horrible situation. But I do – but, like, why would you do this if you were a man? Why would you go to the Jets?
No, and you know, connection to Gase means nothing in this situation because that's not ownership.
Right.
Sorry, why would you ever go to be a GM because you have a good relationship with the head coach that you have no idea how long he'll be there?
Right, right. You guys watch Peyton Manning's nephew? You guys see that video out there?
Arch Manning.
Maybe that's the Jets' plan. Just wait till 2026. Do you have some thoughts on Arch Manning?
No. It's, you know, he's going to be, we're all going to be.
He didn't look like that video did not look like it. Do you see the video?
I did.
He did not look like an eighth grader. Like it was pretty impressive for a kid who is,
it was.
Yeah, 13 years old. And I feel kind of guilty about like assessing a 13 year old on the podcast here, but I don't think they were shy about putting it out there, so I think we're okay.
I'm going to feel so dead inside 10 years later when I'm stuck in a scrum pre-draft trying to get a soundbite from Arch Manning. Like, I think that's going to be the day when I just, you
that's
know,
it
just,
for covering
get,
the NFL.
Just pack the family in the car and we're going to go somewhere where no one can find me. I think that's it for me.
You're
that's going to be the
Arch
end.
Manning.
Yeah, that's it.
At the at the 2026 draft in like,
oh my God,
in like Berlin.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, I'm just going to be like tired. Yeah, it'll be like a weird time zone and my body will just not be acclimated and I'll be listening to Arch Manning, who we know is going to somehow manipulate the draft to go to the team he wants to. And then, you know, here we go. I mean, just circle of life.
First pick of the London Jaguars in
circle
2026.
Of life. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Connor, news item number three.
Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger are at it again. While Roethlisberger apologized for the way he handled Brown's remaining weeks in Pittsburgh on Monday, the Mercurial Steelers wideout fired back on Twitter, seeming to call the quarterback two-faced. Can't these kids just get along?
I think the best part about this story was like Ben was like, I think Ben was just trying to maybe like close the book on it and like maybe has been like gotten sick of talking about it. And
the book has been reopened.
The book was reopened, yes.
Do you think that Brown wanted Ben to say, you really were the MVP last year? You were the team MVP.
Maybe that's what was missing.
Like maybe
right?
That's what was missing.
That was what was missing. Yep. It wasn't Juju, bro. It was you.
This whole thing to
you
me,
were my MVP.
Is just ridiculous. You know, it's ridiculous from the start to the finish. It's ridiculous on both sides, including the fact that like
you don't enjoy a good grudge held.
I don't know. I just don't care. But including the fact that Ben Roethlisberger is saying, well, in today's media, you can't apologize. Well, you also can't do any of the stuff that you did leading up to that either. I mean, you know, it all comes back to us for somehow, you know,
That's a great point, Connor.
That's a very good point.
I have to be honest with you. This is going to sound terrible because we're on a podcast talking about NFL topics, but I missed this exchange yesterday.
Ah. Oh.
So I'm actually kind of relieved to know that like there is some like place that you don't have to hear about Antonio Brown.
Yeah, where
and
were you and where can I go?
Yeah, exactly. I closed Twitter. I was finishing another story and I closed Twitter for the morning.
My favorite part about this particular confrontation between the two, like AB versus Ben part 72, was that it was like all AB did was just tweet that two-faced, no like context, nothing, just two-faced. So, and then, you know, like, of course you can take that any way you want, which
is a great trick for group chats. I'm gonna keep that in mind.
Is that even would that be classified as passive aggressive? Because
It
would be. Is it passive aggressive or is
that's
that
a subtweet?
But it just feels like because everyone knows what he's referencing, it's like more. It's kind of aggressive, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little passive aggressive. I think subtweets are a subcategory of passive aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If I were him, the move would have been to tweet a GIF.
You can go either way, Connor.
Ah, so to tweet
personal preference
of Two-Face of Harvey Dent.
Oh, I like
and then
it.
Just and then really
just
then
let everyone figure it out.
Yeah, and then really kind of be cryptic about it.
And then the next media availability. Oh no! I'm just a fan of Batman, just like the movie.
That's a good trick.
Does it? I mean, does it matter? I don't know. I mean, are we still talking about this in September, October? I don't think so. Right?
Do they play? I can't even remember. Do they play? The Steelers and the Raiders?
I don't believe so.
Well, that's a shame.
That would be a shame if they don't. This really is a football podcast. We do know things.
Anybody want to pull up the schedule?
We don't really cover the league, so.
What do you guys think of Antonio Brown's use of social media?
He probably should do what I did on Monday morning and close the Twitter app.
Yeah.
For a little bit.
Delete the Twitter app from his phone. That's a popular move, right?
During in season, delete the Twitter app.
Yeah. Connor's looking it up for us.
Yeah, they do not.
Okay, so there you have it. All right, news item number four. Despite his status as, quote, the straw that stirs the drink, Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott once again finds himself in some off-field heat. Could a most recent video showing some questionable behavior at an electronic music festival reopen a conversation about Elliott's maturity and ability to stay out of trouble? Zeke might have been doing nothing wrong. I don't know. I don't think the Cowboys have the full story on it yet. Here's the thing is, and I think we've talked about this in the past, when people have a narrative on you, like, and you do something that like lines up right with that narrative, that's on you. Okay. And we've talked about this with other players, with coaches in the past, right? Like Adam Gase. Now there's a narrative out there on him, right? Where, okay, he stabbed McCagnan in the back. And now he's making moves to get rid of like any trace of McCagnan in the building, the same way like Chip did that with Howie, and then Howie did it back with Chip. So that's on you for playing into the narrative, right? And I think with Zeke, it's like, look, he had this reputation coming out of Ohio State as somebody who partied too much, who like was a little bit wild off the field. And look, if you... Now you're getting into a confrontation at an electronic dance music festival.
I believe it was the Electric Daisy Carnival.
Is that right?
Have you ever been there before?
No, have you?
No.
In Vegas, like you're asking for it, right? Like, so he may have been doing nothing wrong, but like, if you get into a confrontation at that venue, in that setting, like it's just going to play into what people think about you. And so this to me falls into the category of, this is an easily avoidable thing for Zeke, and he chose not to avoid it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, not great interaction with the girlfriend.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And that too.
A little threatening, I would say, and scary given the history.
Given the history. That too. Yep. Yeah. And again, you don't want to insinuate anything, but like, you know, certainly that's another piece of it. And it's, you're putting yourself in position to open those questions back up. Like, that's no one else's fault but your own. And so, yeah, I mean, if I'm the Cowboys, I look at this and it probably does make me think a little bit, and I have to sit down and have a hard discussion with this guy before I think about paying him now.
And they're already having a hard discussion. You know, even before this, it was a hard discussion. You know what I mean? Because you have to decide whether you're going to pay him now or you're going to, you know, make him wait through this whole deal, and how much money to give when, you know, all the future of these long-term running back deals already aren't looking very good.
Yeah, I mean, Todd Gurley's like a good example of it. And like the Cowboys, I mean, that's the other thing. If you're Zeke, like the Cowboys could be looking for a reason to just say, eh, like, you know, we'll wait on that. We'll take care of Amari and Dak just based on the history of the position, right?
Absolutely.
Like just based on what the position is.
Absolutely.
Cowboys could be looking for a reason. You're giving them one.
And how, what is, does this raise to the rise to the level of any NFL discipline? You know, he was strongly warned after the last situation, served the suspension, but was not to get in any kind of trouble again.
And what we always talk about with these things, what they always talk about with these things is like you're doing things to that reflect poorly on the league, right? Like, and this would, I think, fall into that category. It's like when Ben wasn't convicted, when Zeke wasn't convicted earlier, like when you're doing things that put yourself, you're putting the league in a bad light. Robert Kraft is, you know, running into this too, like where it's like if you're putting yourself, if you're doing things that are going to reflect poorly on the league's going to punish you. So I think it's something that the league will look at too. Absolutely. All right. Jenny, Connor, whoever wants to take news item number five.
I can do that. Something actually just popped into my head about this locale, by the way. Powerful men and women of the NFL will gather to tinker with the pass interference rules this week at a Ritzy enclave in Key Biscayne, Florida. It's actually the Ritz in Key Biscayne, Florida.
There you go.
So best bartender in America, I would argue, at the Ritz in Key Biscayne, Florida.
Is that
Florida.
Right?
There's a beach bar.
He's a veteran of the Jets.
Literally,
he's also
just
a veteran of the Ritz in Key Biscayne.
It's all starting to come back to me now.
Best bartender in America. Huh?
So
that's a strong claim.
There was this guy, and I'll never forget it. He was like, He loved the band Earth, Wind, and Fire. I swear to God, if you go there, he's probably still there. And his like big claim to fame was that he ran some bar in Ohio, and Earth, Wind, and Fire's bus broke down in front of this bar, and he let them in, and they partied all night. And so his whole bit, like, to start every morning is he plays like that 21st of September song, and yep. he tells the story, and he points at everybody, and he dances, and then
wow,
oh, it's out of this world, outrageous. Like, the guy's sweating, you know, he's like working his butt off, and you know what he does? He fills the straw of the drink that you ordered with the alcohol that's mixed in, right? So if you
oh,
get like,
wow.
so if you get a pina
that's
colada,
move.
Then you fill the straw up with rum. So the first thing you drink, you know, so you get an additional shot that you didn't have to pay for, and it sort of, you know, spices
that's
up
a nice
the
move.
Spices
Albert
up the morning.
We'll be visiting this bartender when he arrives in Key Biscayne, and we will have a full recap on next week's podcast.
By the way, right. which could be awful to have all the NFL's power players by this guy. He was a very pleasant person, though.
Okay, so what do you guys think of the tinkering of the... And just to be clear, what they're going to vote on this week is they're going to vote to empower the competition committee to change to tweak the review process for pass interference. The idea there would be to put it in the coach's hands, which it will be the only thing that's in the coach's challenge system in the last 2 minutes of halves and games. And the one kind of tweak to that I've, you know, been able to kind of get out of this is that they are going to exclude Hail Mary plays from that, which I think is a little weird because how do you define a Hail Mary, like that part of it, but
exclude it from that. So that would mean that the Hail Marys,
you can't challenge on a Hail, you can't challenge PI on a Hail Mary.
And would the booth have any authority?
I think the booth would have authority.
The booth would have authority yep. on that.
Right. So
things are getting a little complicated.
This
I would
is
say.
Like, yeah. And I know like part of the concern. So they went around to Al Riveron, went around to all the coaches, and their concern that came up was, and it's interesting because the coaches have gone back and forth on this. Originally, the reason they wanted it this way, they wanted to kind of like start to implement a sky judge. And they also were worried that they didn't want the challenge of the Hail Mary to be part of the whole system, right? So that was their initial concern. Then they double back, and Al Riveron doubles back with the coaches. And the coaches' problem now then became, well, if the officials are reviewing these, there's going to be a ton of stoppages because you can find pass interference on a lot of different plays. And so they were worried it was going to be like foul shots at the end of a basketball game where it was going to be like review after review after review on PI. This already does feel like it's getting complicated. Jenny, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Like it's hard. Like is this, are we starting to see, I guess, like the quote unquote unintended consequences coming to life before this thing's even implemented?
I think the other unintended consequence, which is probably one that the NFL wants, would be that coaches would probably challenge less the rest of the game because you are going to want to have a flag in the final 2 minutes to challenge a PI, right?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so it's... Yeah, I'm all for... I'm all for, like, I want everything to be part of the challenge system. I want coaches to be able to challenge whatever. I don't think it's going to add a ton of time to the games and everything else. And I actually think, like, that if the coaches are forced to be a little more judicious with their challenges, then that's a good thing, right?
Because there are coaches who notoriously just blow through them, you know, over the first, like, two quarters of the game and then don't have them when a legitimate game-turning moment could happen.
Right.
Right. The Hail Mary is an extra thing that makes it sort of, I don't see why that would be necessary to exclude the Hail Mary.
Because the thought is that you can find interference on a lot of Hail Marys, and so it could be like a game-altering thing.
But you would let the booth do the Hail Mary or not?
I think so. Like that part, okay. I haven't been able to nail down. But I mean, like maybe the booth would be like, it'd have to be egregious.
Egregious.
Like you're actually ripping a guy down or something like that.
That's a slippery slope.
Very slippery slope for like
the Hail Mary is
a
tough one.
Play, right?
Yeah, the Hail Mary. Like, and again, like how do you define a Hail Mary? Like,
right.
You know, so there's that part of it too. Like is a Hail Mary also like the play at the end of the Dolphins Patriots game? You know, so now are you be able to challenge like picks on those plays, you know what I mean, like stuff like that.
Great, so, great point. Yes.
So like, there's stuff that I think, I don't know. It's I've been of the feeling all along that offensive pass interference is going to be And there's going to be more radical change to offensive pass interference now than defensive pass interference with the ability to challenge that. And it may change the way some teams play offense because so many of these pick plays and rub routes and all that are stuff that have been ingrained in football now for a while. It's complicated. It's going to be fascinating to see the way this plays out, and it may not play out the way that the league hopes it plays out in the, you know, when we get to the fall.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. One last news item, by the way, before we get out of here. Julian Edelman signed a 2-year extension with the Patriots. This wasn't on our list, and it seems like it made sense all along, you know, like that they needed to take care of Edelman after you saw guys like Adam Humphries. I think Adam Humphries got, what, $10 million a year? Like, he was so far behind everybody else. So good for Julian Edelman. He deserves it. I think this is something that's probably been a long time coming, and it's good to see the Patriots actually reward a guy like this who they, you know, probably on paper didn't need to reward.
Odd that Belichick paying someone for previous performance instead of future performance, perhaps an indicator of the downfall of the Patriots dynasty.
Wow.
Things got heavy here.
A harbinger of bad things to come.
Now I wish that I had Connor write that one up too.
That's right.
We should have had Connor write that one up too. But we actually just got the result of what you writing it up would have been.
It's true. Yeah.
So
good. Or is always ready. You stay ready.
So good for Julian Edelman. All right. See you guys next week. All right. We'll jump right into the six pack. You guys know how this works. Every Tuesday, I put the call for questions out on Twitter. If I pick yours, you get a like on Twitter. That means I hit that little heart there. And you get an answer here on the podcast. Question number one, my producer Brandon and I discussed this. Top five games you're looking forward to this season. He asked about the Monday night doubleheader. I actually think, and I'm going to give you one of my five games here. I actually think it would have been made sense. And me and Brandon, like I said, we just discussed this. It makes sense if they put the Cardinals there, I think. Because and I know it came out before the draft, but we all thought Kyler was getting drafted by them. I mean, so the Cardinals play the Lions in week one. I believe it's at least a 4:25 game. But Cliff Kingsbury's offense, we haven't seen it. Kyler Murray starting week one. I just think the Cardinals are interesting, right?
I would much rather have that than have the Raiders and Broncos.
Right. Like, I would really, like, I think that'd be a really interesting, just a, like, what's it going to be? Is it going to be a train wreck? Like, is Kyler's height going to be in it? Like, there's so many questions we don't know. And it's like, it's almost like, I don't think it's maybe the same. It's probably not the same degree as it was like with Chip Kelly and Michael Vick in 2013, right? Because that was like this, like we had not seen an offense. So we've seen offenses that are sort of in the same way as Cliff Kingsbury's offense, but that is absolutely on my list. Like week one, Lions, Cardinals would be one of my five games. You too?
And also to add to your point, I mean, look what happened last year. Monday Night Football, yep. Sam Darnold, he wowed everybody.
Yeah.
In Detroit.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the NFL missed the boat on that one. Another game I think everybody's looking forward to, this would be, and this is in no particular order, a second game on my list would be the Saints and the Rams for obvious reasons. The way that the season ended last year, two high-powered offenses, it's in week two. That to me is like one of those games that you're looking forward to, and you'd be looking forward to if there weren't all the strings attached just from an entertainment value. But, you know, you've also got the storyline of how the pass interference call, the Roby Coleman play affected everything at the end of last year. The third game, I think this is an easy one too. Chiefs-Patriots, it's in December. It should have playoff implications. Patrick Mahomes going back into Foxborough. That was one of the most entertaining games of the 2018 season. The way that Patrick Mahomes battled back, to me, like that's when we really found out who Patrick Mahomes was, because everything had gone great for him up to that point. Threw a couple picks in that game. We saw him deal with a little adversity. I feel like we found out a lot about Patrick Mahomes, how he reacted in that environment Sunday night in Foxborough with the stakes being what they were. And so fascinated to watch that one. Of course, we had the AFC Championship game, which is a barn burner as well. So getting to see Chiefs-Patriots is absolutely up there on my list. How about this one? Browns-Patriots, week eight. Feels like the Browns will be in contention. That would be a big test for Baker Mayfield, for Freddie Kitchens, for everyone in that organization. So that would be the fourth game on my list. And then number five, sort of like the Chiefs-Chargers game in Mexico City. This is a interesting one from a number of different standpoints. Obviously, the Mexico City game got canceled last year. Chiefs Chargers is going to be a big game because it's an AFC West game. And then there's the importance of this from the Chargers standpoint, taking a home game away from the Los Angeles Chargers and putting it in Mexico City. That's just, to me, I think, kind of like an interesting subplot. And I think that's going to be an interesting game. So those are your five games to look forward to this season. Question number two, this is from Tim Wentz. That's at LWYR up 406. Barring injury, do you see any way Drew Lock takes significant snaps with the Broncos this year? And how big a weapon do you see Noah Fant being in that offense? I think Noah Fant's going to be a big weapon in that offense based on their new offensive coordinator, Rich Scangarillo, and how those offenses use their tight ends. We've seen the way Kyle Shanahan has used guys like George Kittle in San Francisco, Austin Hooper in Atlanta, Jordan Reed in Washington. We saw the way that Sean McVay has used Gerald Everett and Tyler Higbee in L.A. So I think Noah Fant's going to be a big part of the offense. There is a way we see Drew Lock this year if the Broncos fall out of contention. That's the road to starting for Drew Lock. I believe it's also the road to starting for Daniel Jones. Those two guys, the way those guys get on the field is if the team isn't contending anymore. Question number three, this is from Christopher. That's at Chris Lunacy. It doesn't actually spell like Lunacy or Lucini. L-U-C-I-N-I-I. And L-U-C-I-N-I. Was Josh Rosen ever actually on the Patriots' radar? I don't think so. I think there may have come a point if the price had really dipped where they would have viewed him as a value. But I don't think it was ever at the point where they were going to give up big capital for him based on what I know of what they thought of him coming out in 2018. That evaluation obviously is still fairly fresh, only a year old. And so based on what I know about where they had him in 2018, I would have been surprised if they made a big play for him. Question number four is from Steven Dudnoth. That's at Steven Dudnoth. Should the Jets trade Le'Veon Bell, likeliest landing spots and potential return? You know, I don't think they should trade him before the season. But, like, if they aren't any good, like, that could be an interesting way to buy a draft pick if you're the Jets. Like, and if the new general manager wants to be creative about this, he could, like, view the upfront money that they gave Bell as sort of, and this sounds crazy, but, like, sort of paying for a draft pick, right? So you bought him, and you didn't lose anything buying him, because there was no comp pick, you know, implication because they hadn't lost any big free agents. And, you know, if you can flip him for something before the trade deadline, I actually think that there's some value there where you could get a draft pick back for him. Say somebody's willing to give a 3 for him and you feel like you're still a year or two away, which, you know, you got a 27-year-old running back here. How good's he going to be when you finally get there? I don't think it's crazy to think that the new general manager could come in there and say, I view Le'Veon Bell as an asset in midseason. I'm willing to deal him away. Question number five, and I didn't even realize this, but it's the same guy. Christopher, I'll get to your questions now. I don't like to answer two questions from the same person, but you're the beneficiary of my mistake here. That's at Chris Lucini again. I'm going to mispronounce his name 7 different ways. Is the Patriots' current coaching staff something to worry about? I don't think so, because I think the fact that so much of the turnover happened on defense mitigates the issue. If they had this sort of issue on offense and they need to find somebody new to coach Brady and there were position jobs that were flipping over, I think that would have been a problem. Because this happened on defense, I think Belichick can make up the difference. Now, where this could affect them down the line is as they start to work some of these younger players into the lineup. They've got a lot of draft picks up from the last couple of years. This could affect them in 2 years, 3 years, when, from a player development standpoint. I think that that is a fact, could be a factor. But in the short term, I don't think it's an issue. I think Bill's got that place wired to the point where it won't be an issue. And this is question number 6 from Glenn Savoy. That's at GSavoy87. Gerald McCoy to the Saints. What do you think, Brandon? Gerald McCoy to the Saints.
I actually kind of like that.
I don't mind that. The Saints are in such a win-now spot. Like, they traded up to get the center in the draft. I don't mind that. Like, Gerald McCoy to the Saints actually makes some sense because they're in such a spot to win right now. They don't know how much longer their quarterback's going to play. If I'm the Saints, I might take a swing on that. Like that, like he is somebody who'd come in, he'd be motivated, he'd be in division with Tampa, right? So chance to stick it to his old team. He's not the player he was, and the reason Tampa got rid of him is because he's not a $13 million player anymore, and he wasn't willing to take a huge pay cut to stay there. But you put the chance to compete for a championship there for him and the chance to stick it to his old team, kind of like it. Appreciate all you guys coming out. As always, we want your feedback. We want to make this your podcast. So please get to me on social media. Tell me what you guys want to see in the podcast. You can get me on Twitter at Albert Breer, on Facebook at Albert R. Breer, on Instagram at Albert_Breer. And always remember to listen to our podcast and the Monday Morning Podcast with Gary Gramling and Andy Benoit. You can get both of us on one feed now, the MMQB NFL podcast feed. We're on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.